This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, what impact do recent landmark Supreme Court rulings on the U.S. health care law, Obamacare, and same-sex marriage have on U.S. President Barack Obama's legacy and the 2016 presidential elections? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. What a difference a week makes. The U.S. Supreme Court last week handed President Obama two major victories. The highest court in America upheld a key part of his signature health care law, which first went into effect 5 years ago. At issue were federal tax subsidies that helped millions of Americans buy health insurance in several states. The Supreme Court upheld the subsidies by a vote of 6-3, with conservative Chief Justice John Roberts joining with the majority. And same-sex marriage is now legal nationwide in the United States after the Supreme Court ruled that Americans' constitutional freedoms and protections afford gays and lesbians the right to wed. Regarding his signature domestic legislative achievement, Mr. Obama proclaimed victory at the White House by saying, quote, "And today, after more than 50 votes in Congress to repeal or weaken this law, after a presidential election based in part on preserving or repealing this law, and after multiple challenges to this law before the Supreme Court, the Affordable Care Act is here to stay." Unquote. However, continuing disputes over the health care law may well be a factor in the 2016 presidential political campaign. But that's not all President Obama achieved in recent days. On trade, he had another victory. He signed into law two hard-fought bills giving him greater authority to negotiate international trade deals and providing aid to workers whose jobs are displaced by such pacts. The Trade Promotion Authority legislation, also known as Fast Track, is expected to speed the completion of the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations with 11 other Pacific Rim nations in the coming weeks. And let's not forget that President Obama announced his plans to formally reestablish diplomatic relations with Cuba, declaring that the two nations were ready to reopen embassies in each other's capital and, as he said, to start a new chapter of engagement after more than a half century of estrangement. Well, with us to discuss the major implications of the Supreme Court's rulings and other major breakthroughs on both President Obama's legacy and the Republican presidential contenders are two veteran political analysts and valued commentators at these VOA microphones. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center here in Washington, and Igor Volsky. He's managing editor of thinkprogress.org. That's a progressive political blog affiliated with the Center for American Progress, also based here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Good to be here.
John Fortier, let me begin with you. Although we did talk about a number of legislative victories and the Supreme Court rulings in the introduction, I just wanted to quote from one of our faithful listeners, Ray Ondoro from Nairobi, Kenya, who is, well, to say he's a fan of President Obama is an understatement. He says, "This past week must have been the best for President Obama and his presidency. The policy achievements came stacked up as a pack of cards, even though the party might have been spoiled by the massacre of those nine worshipers by the lone racist gunman." Of course, he's referring, of course, to the terrible tragedy in Charleston, South Carolina. On Wednesday came the free trade agreement, the authorization by Congress, and the passing of the LGBT law by the Supreme Court. No wonder President Obama has been in a buoyant mood, despite, of course, this tragedy in South Carolina. The president must be feeling unshackled, given that he's no longer looking for American votes and can therefore go into uncharted waters now as he nears his second term. What do you think, John?
Well, I think he's right that it's been a very good week for Barack Obama. In some ways, it's a pretty good time in his second term where he's had some troubles earlier on. Clearly, the health care decision by the Supreme Court does enshrine that his major legislative proposal, health care, is, I would say, here to stay at least for his term, or at least it cannot be at all undone unless Republicans gain the White House and gain majorities in Congress, in which case certainly there could be some changes or cutting back or maybe even more major changes. But legislatively, that won't happen while Democrats have part of power. So that ensures his signature legacy. You know, I think also the president, as he's moved through his term, has seen public opinion move on some issues. I mean, particularly the gay marriage issue or other gay rights issues, where we've seen over time the public opinion of the youngest voters really moving more into the middle of the electorate, that is becoming a majority position in many ways. And the president, you know, has sort of evolved on this over time and feels more comfortable being more socially liberal on a number of issues, but particularly that one. That decision, which Republicans, many of them on the campaign trail, are opposing, is one that, you know, is moving in a majoritarian direction. I might caution the president a bit and Democrats to think that we have moved into some socially liberal era on all issues. I think there's a sense that the president feels, listeners said, unshackled or not limited in any way to going and being more clearly socially liberal, not tempering his positions as he had earlier. That may be the case in gay marriage and some other areas, but I'm not clear that we're going into a liberal era on all issues. These things will be problematic. So we didn't talk about trade also. I think trade's a little bit different. Quick thing on that is that essentially I think the president, like many other presidents of the Democratic Party, is free trade, but his caucus in Congress is not very free trade, and there was a big conflict there. I think on that he will get the credit for this particular victory, but there will be an interesting debate in the Democratic primary. Hillary Clinton and others will probably have to not necessarily be in favor of the free trade position as much, and certainly members of Congress are not so happy with it. But it is a personal victory for the president, who wanted this and got it done this week.
Absolutely. A very important victory, as you said, personally for him, in spite of considerable opposition from many fellow Democratic lawmakers on that trade promotion authority, paving the way for the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal and perhaps others. Turning to you, Igor Volsky, for your take on this incredible week. What are your thoughts?
I think it's really a remarkable time for the president, and he said to an interviewer a couple of weeks ago that now as he enters his final years in office, he feels really free to take risks that he would have never taken otherwise. You saw that in the way he handled the Charleston shooting, singing at the memorial. You wouldn't have seen him do that, I don't think, a couple of years ago, and issuing very powerful statements, both about the marriage decision at the court and the health care decision. And you saw the administration a couple of days ago also now talking about where do we go from here in terms of Obamacare? How do we improve the law? They're calling on states to expand Medicaid, since many Republican states are still resisting. And really seeing this as an opportunity to build on his legacy and saying, finally, look, Republicans are going to oppose me no matter what I do, and so I'm just going to push ahead. And in terms of the Republican primary that's happening now, I thought those two decisions, health care and same-sex marriage, really provided them with an opportunity to pivot on marriage, to say the Supreme Court has ruled. The culture has certainly shifted over a number of years. It did so quickly. We're going to stop talking about this issue and move on. It's not what they did. They're focusing on certain voters in Iowa, South Carolina, that they need to win their party's nomination. And it's going to cause trouble for them, I think, in the general election. And same thing with health care. It's now finally the law of the land. Yes, you can tweak it here and there, but it's here to stay. Yet Republicans, you listen to the rhetoric, they're saying they're going to repeal it and do away with it. But of course, we know that's not going to happen. When the court was about to issue their ruling, there was mass panic in Republican circles. What are we going to do? They're going to blame us if all these people lose coverage. We don't have any kind of solution. Oh my, oh my. So you certainly can't imagine that by 2017, when a new president is sworn in, even if that's a Republican president, that they're going to be able to take coverage away from, by then, is probably going to be some 20 million people. It's completely unrealistic. So in that sense, marriage, Cuba, trade, healthcare, that's President Obama's legacy. Republicans may not like it, but they're going to have to live with it.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Back to Encounter, and we're talking about the implications of recent U.S. Supreme Court rulings on the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and same-sex marriage, among other achievements. And now back to you, John Fortier. Even though now marriage equality is law of the land and Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, as you both alluded to, there are going to be some challenges. What do you see are the challenges ahead, particularly with regard to same-sex marriage?
Well, I think
in terms of implementation,
Igor and I agree on some things and not on others. I think on the question of marriage equality, the longer term public opinion shift, it seemed sudden in a certain way, but it's also been building and is likely to continue. But the Republican primary electorate, and especially the ones in early states, is going to be more resistant to that. And many of the candidates have been a few. Lindsey Graham, for example, a senator from South Carolina running for president, has said, look, I don't like this at all, but it would take a constitutional amendment to overturn it, so I guess we have to move on. But many others have voiced a stronger opposition. I think it's going to be hard for them, as Lindsey Graham said, to do anything about it. So ultimately, that will be accepted even in states where it's not popular.
Turning to Igor Volsky, certainly these political issues are going to come to the fore as we ramp up to 2016. But with respect to particularly same-sex marriage, what concrete obstacles do you see?
Well, there's going to be instances in states like Louisiana, for instance, which still hasn't recognized the marriage decision. Bobby Jindal, the governor of that state who's running for president, his entire platform is based on this idea that religious liberty is under attack, and so he's going to do everything he can to fight it. And there's going to be a small vocal minority who are going to resist. These are the clerks at some of the offices that perform marriage across the state. These are some of the vendors that are in the wedding business that are also resisting. But they're very few and far in between. You saw after the decision, no great protests, no great uprising, really anywhere in America against this decision.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center here in Washington, and Igor Volsky, from whom you just heard. He's managing editor of thinkprogress.org at the Center for American Progress, a think tank also based here in Washington. We're talking about the implications of recent U.S. Supreme Court rulings and a number of other achievements for President Obama. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or keep up with us on Facebook. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email at encounter@voanews.com or like us on Facebook. Well, back to you, John Fortier. And here's a question going into the 2016 election, and it does have to do with the Supreme Court, but it has to do with the makeup of the Supreme Court itself, John Fortier. To what extent do you think this can and will be an issue in the 2016 election? There are a number of vacancies. We're having lots of close decisions, 5-4 decisions. Talk about the makeup of the Supreme Court right now, and to what extent do you think potential vacancies on the court will make for the fact that the Supreme Court itself may be on the ballot?
Well, the court is closely divided, as is America, on many issues. I do think it will be an issue in the campaign. I don't want to say that it's going to be the issue. It has always been the issue. We've been closely divided for quite a while, and it can be very consequential who is the president. We're not sure. We don't know when vacancies will occur. But as it stands now, roughly speaking, there's a 5-4 majority for the conservative side. I would say that both Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Anthony Kennedy are sometimes swing votes. They are more on the conservative side, but they certainly, on key issues, key decisions, will go with the 4 liberal justices who vote together often as a block. So a president coming in office, the right vacancy, someone on the conservative side leaving with a Democratic president would be a very big change in the court. Even for Republicans, replacing Anthony Kennedy or replacing a liberal justice would solidify a majority. So it would be significant either way. The simplest point is the next vacancy, especially one that could shift the balance of the court, will be the biggest battle in Washington. I think we'll talk about for several months, which will potentially change the direction of the country.
Igor Volsky, as you know, in our system, the president has the prerogative of choosing the Supreme Court justices, even though they have to be obviously confirmed by the Congress. But to what extent do you think, even if not a major issue, obviously, but the makeup of the Supreme Court could play as an issue in 2016?
I agree, and I think it's really one of the key ways that presidents secure their legacy is those who they appoint to the Supreme Court. These are lifetime positions, and certainly in instances like this, with major issues like healthcare, same-sex marriage, the weight of those decisions is felt because they really, as John pointed out, in some ways drive the direction of the country, push the country in a certain way. Republicans have had some losses this term. Certainly the court on many issues has been more liberal than some expected. That's probably going to change next term, as we're seeing some of the cases they're taking up. But at least at this point in time, Republicans, particularly conservatives, are very frustrated with the court. They're very frustrated with John Roberts for upholding the president's health care law not once but twice, certainly on same-sex marriage and some other issues we saw. And frankly, I think there's going to be a big opening for people like Ted Cruz and Mike Huckabee, who have kind of very strong ideological views further to the right, I would say, than many Americans, for them to say, we will only appoint justices that will, you know, strictly interpret the Constitution, and thereby suggesting would reverse some of the gains we've seen, or at least keep certain aspects of law, you know, when it comes to, for instance, the pro-choice, pro-life debate, that they would weigh in on the pro-life side of the aisle, because again, probably some of those cases are going to be making their way to the court. And in that sense, I think it's a political issue because it's something the president can directly impact and something that she or he can have a real stamp on.
Back to you, John Forte. Well, speaking of Ted Cruz and Mike Huckabee, two Republican contenders for the Republican nomination, let's talk about the Republican race for the presidency. And of course, those two, Mike Huckabee and Ted Cruz, are among the most conservative. We know that Ted Cruz says he wants a constitutional amendment. That's probably not going to happen to undo the same-sex marriage. But talk about some of the other contenders that we have seen enter into the race, and what is the Republican side looking like?
Well, the first thing you notice is the difference between the Democratic side and the Republican side is the number of candidates, and that there's clearly a strong front-runner on the Democratic side, although we'll note that there has been some interesting movements from Bernie Sanders, who I do not think will win, but you know, she will not go unchallenged.
She meaning
Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
On the Republican side, it is a much larger race. I mean, we could have up to 20 candidates or so of serious sort, senators and governors and people who've held high office. In fact, the Republicans are having some difficulties because we always have these large number of people on stage in the primary debates, and now it may be so large that Fox News and others who help sponsor the debates may only allow the top 10 or so to show up on stage and have a second tier in the background. So it's a big race, and there's no clear front runner. I do think, though, that there are some people who stand out. Five or so candidates I think will be around to the end. Will be a couple of very conservative ones. You mentioned Ted Cruz, who is a Tea Party candidate in many ways, but also, you know, strong social and defense conservative. And then another Tea Party person of interest, Rand Paul, who's a more libertarian side. So those two will, I think, be very strong candidates because they have a base of people who will support them. They have a certain dynamism on the pretty conservative side. Hard to see that they would win, but I still think that they will be there quite far along. Three candidates I would put in the stronger position at this point. Jeb Bush, who is, of course, someone who's well known, has not come out of the gates as strongly as some thought, but still has a lot of resources, a lot of good qualities, a lot of backing from establishment people in the party, can be a conservative candidate who will also reach out to more of the left of the party. Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, I think he stands out. We have many, many governors running, and a lot of them have a lot to recommend them, but they don't have a particular niche. And I think Scott Walker combines having been, on the one hand, a governor of a swing state in the Midwest. You could say he's somebody who's electable in a swing or even Democratic-leading state, and yet has also been very tough on unions, especially, and fiscal matters in Wisconsin, really gained the ire of Democrats. And Democrats are gunning for him, and therefore Republicans like him. He's seen by conservatives as somebody who stood up to Democrats. And finally, Marco Rubio, second Hispanic candidate. We mentioned Ted Cruz, but a Cuban-American from Florida. Really was a protege of Jeb Bush in many ways, and that'll be an interesting race just between the two of them. But somebody who's quite an inspiring candidate, has an interesting background, from really pulled himself up by the bootstraps, kind of immigrant background, but speaks, you know, well to the conservative audiences in the Tea Party. I think those three have staying power. There are plenty of others. You mentioned Mike Huckabee, others, but
we'll let Igor.
Hard to break through in this big field. I think those are ones to watch.
Indeed. So, Igor Volsky, please feel free to mention some others, one of whom is from your home state.
Yes, Chris Christie announcing in my high school. I mean, he happened to go there too, but
Governor of New Jersey.
Governor of New Jersey, that he's running for president. I agree with John on all the tiers and how they break up, but I would just say very frankly that I think all of them, all 13, 14, 15, have been pathetic in this race. And I'll say why. I think there's two instances, and they're the instances in any presidential race where you have kind of an opportunity to really lead on a moral issue. And all 13, 14 failed miserably. The first one was, of course, the Charleston shooting, when the Republican candidates first refused to admit that it was a racist issue at all. After it became clear that race was indeed a factor, they all kind of tiptoed around the question of the Confederate flag. Only after the South Carolina governor, Nikki Haley, called for it to come down, did they all suddenly trip over themselves to also agree vehemently that it now needs to come down. I mean, the closest person who took leadership on the issue is Florida Governor Jeb Bush, who also issued some tepid statement that ensured that you wouldn't see a headline, Jeb Bush calls for the flag to come down. He didn't want that to happen because they don't want to offend certain aspects of their base. And issue two has been this Donald Trump situation where presidential candidate who's what, number two, number three in some of the polls, calls Mexicans killers and rapists. And the Republican Party is silent about that. And, you know, they may have taken off their Donald Trump ties and cufflinks, but they're certainly not condemning him. And it really, I think, says a lot about the field, and it illustrates is that they have no idea where the country stands. They have no idea. They had no idea that the flag issue would resonate with Americans nationwide as it has. And the firestorm that these Trump comments are causing, they're also not plugged in. And it tells me that even though, you know, when we get close to the election, Trump and South Carolina won't really have a huge impact on the race. Ultimately, people aren't going to be kind of deciding based on that. But it really sets the tenor and the tone for their campaigns. And the fact that they're so scared to alienate any portion of their base, part of which may be racist and supremacist, I think is a big problem for them.
All right. Well, as we close, back to you, John Fortier, you can stick it to the Democrats if you want, because we are turning out to the Democrats. Just as Igor Volsky said, perhaps some of these comments by some of the candidates in the Republican field have set the tenor and tone for the campaign with their rather dubious remarks. In contrast, were the last few weeks mostly positive news, for example, for the Democrats, given the Supreme Court victories for predominantly Democratic issues? What about the Democrats going forward? And are there any other challengers beside Bernie Sanders, the Democrat? He's considered almost socialist from Vermont on the Democratic side.
Well, I'll agree with you in one sense that Donald Trump is a problem for Republicans, or I don't know if a problem, but someone who is not, nobody wants to be the face of the Republican Party. And I don't think he will be. I think at the end of the day, he will not be the nominee or even a very, very significant factor in this race. There are ways in which a primary electorate on the Republican side can move right. Certainly you see it moving left on the Democratic side. We knew Hillary Clinton would not go unchallenged. I still think she will be the nominee, and there would be a challenge from her left. Would that challenge be somebody who was a strong challenger, maybe an Elizabeth Warren who's decided not to run? No, but it's now being filled by Bernie Sanders. And as you mentioned, Bernie Sanders is pretty far left. And if the Democratic Party wants to hitch their star to Bernie Sanders and his set of issues, I think they're in some trouble themselves. So it will be interesting to see Hillary Clinton. I expect her to move left. She's already moved left. She's essentially running, you know, much more as either a continuation or even perhaps somebody to the left of Barack Obama rather than a continuation of Bill Clinton, who at his time, his project was really to move the Democratic Party much more to the center. The old Clintonism and centrist Democrats that they try to promote are, you know, not really on the agenda of the Democratic side. So at the end of the day, Hillary Clinton is a strong enough candidate to resist those sort of things. But, you know, the primaries get people going in other directions, left on the Democratic side, right on the Republican side. I'm not sure that will be fatal for her, but I certainly don't think that where she's going on the Democratic side is where America is. And that's my comments earlier about the decisions and other ways in which I think the president is feeling comfortable that he can be more socially and other ways liberal in this second term. You know, there's a limit to that. And I think the Democrats can test that limit in their primary by pushing far to the left to get the nomination, even though, as I say, I think she will win.
The last word to you, Igor Volsky, with respect to what extent can the Democrats test this limit of moving to some extent toward the left, buoyed by the recent decisions on the Supreme Court, and to what extent does Bernie Sanders indeed pose a challenge to Hillary Clinton, or is he just a way of moving her more to the left?
Yeah, in some respects, he's there to move her to the left on some issues. And certainly, I think the Clinton folks view him somewhat as a threat, and we know that because they won't talk about him. She, I think, is mostly a centrist candidate, and I think her positions, while maybe slightly to the left of President Clinton, and even slightly to the left, as John pointed out, of President Obama, certainly in immigration, she said she would even go further with the executive actions that he has taken. I think there she could move to the left, but certainly not out of realm of American public opinion.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Igor Volsky, managing editor of thinkprogress.org at the Center for American Progress.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Jackson Witt. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.